G'day and welcome to the Hunting Connection podcast. My name is Zach Williams and I am your host. Here we'll connect you with hunters, fishers and outdoor enthusiasts from around the globe. This podcast will share hunting and fishing stories, including past experiences, and tackle the tough hunting stereotypes our community faces. We hope to be a positive influence to those outside the community while also having a laugh along the way. Hope you enjoy the podcast. G'day and welcome to another episode of Hunting Connection Podcast. Today on the podcast, I've got Lachie Barr from the Tannery Bar. How are you going, mate?
Good, mate. That's what's been happening.
Oh, not too much. You know, just doing some pre-rut scouting this morning, turning into a bit of a hunt with the young fella. What about yourself?
Oh, just getting on top of stuff after the expo, after Mansfield. I got absolutely demolished with how many hides I sold and just trying to play catch up with people messaging me about it and, you know, all the rest of it. And there's hides that I've just been, I fleshed a whole heap out today. I've gone and picked up more today from my guy that drops them off to me from Bairnsdale. So it's just a chaos weekend, one of those things where I'm just trying to play catch up. That's business. So yeah, busy.
Speaking of the Mansfield Expo, how bloody good was it? Even though you probably didn't leave the booth much.
I left it for about 5 minutes to quickly go to the toilet and then run back, and I ran back through the center of it just to get my look at everything. And then literally by the end of the day, you're just a zombie because you're just talking to that many people. I thought I was getting unwell from the next day because my voice was just like sore. I'm like, I must be getting cooked, but no, it was just from talking to so many people. Like, it was shoulder to shoulder for hours. And like, I sold out of t-shirts, like the one I'm wearing now. I didn't bring that many of them. I sold out by like 10:30. It was like they're all gone. And the thing started at 9:00. Like, it was just absolutely wild how quick it was. Like, how the number of people, which is really good because, you know, there's support you could see with people, and the turnout, you know, is a real positive thing. And we need to keep this kind of momentum going with the hunting industry, especially in Australia, and, you know, the attacks that it's kind of got at the moment with certain things. So yeah, it's a really good site. Really, really good.
That's it, man. Like, I was at a Dano from High Country Hunting Gear booth, and it was just flat out all day. You know, I was thinking, you know, I'll help out for a few hours, but he was that busy. I was there pretty much all day. Like, it was absolutely nuts. I seen a few people walking around in your shirt, which is good. And every second person seemed to be wearing some type of High Country hunting apparel. So that was awesome to see as well. And yeah, it was just, I caught up with you just before it opened, I reckon. I dropped in
quarter to nine
and then dropped through about halfway through the day. And yeah, you were flat out constantly.
Yeah. So many people walked past and were like, I just did the old head nod, like, because I knew that I was chatting to that many people, and they're like, yeah, I was going to come past and say good day, but you were just that busy. So yeah, it was, and I had two people still helping me on top of that. So That was really incredible, like, especially when it pays off like that, the feeling you get. You put that much time, and that's the thing people don't understand, the amount of time and effort I'd put into that. I was from December, essentially end of last year, I was full gangbusters just trying to get as much product ready for it, and, you know, t-shirts and all that kind of stuff, because even though it was at the start of March, it was just like, that's how much time I need to get my product online, because it's, yeah, everything is done by myself, and nothing's sent away or anything like that. It's all done in my shed at home. So yeah, the only thing is picking up the skins from Bairnsdale and then bringing them back. So yeah.
No, it was good to see, and you have a good setup there. Was that the first time you're using that big setup, or is that your normal go-to market? Because I see you do a few markets and stuff too, don't you?
Yeah, that's the first time I've had the big marquee that I had full custom built for that type of event. And that's the thing. From here, it was more just trying to do more events like that where big, you know, you get the big numbers coming in, because it is a lot of effort to go to markets. And I kind of felt sometimes markets can be good, but it's a lot of setup for if you have a shitty day and you only sell two hides, or you sell one hide and you're like, this is a rough day to just, you know, not only I'm working 5 days a week, it's as, you know, a carpenter, and then I'm trying to do this on the weekend as my side hustle, to then go to a market on a Saturday or a Sunday and only sell something, it's like, it can be very rough and disheartening. So when you do big events like this, it's, you got to put the effort in, and that was this was the big setup. Like, yeah, I put a lot of effort into just the setup itself. So, yeah.
No, it was good. You had, skins up everywhere. You had a few skulls. I was there as one of the, I reckon it was a Samba skull, got sold, and you had a basket full of antlers as well. So it was good for people to come in.
Yeah, and got the hooks as well, the gamble hooks.
Yeah, the gambles, yep.
Yeah.
That was so good.
Cool. Product you're trying to push, yeah. So, yeah, it's been good. Being very, very good response after it, that's for sure.
Really good. That's awesome. You get lots of people come through to the socials afterwards with that?
Yeah, it pretty much gained, quite a fair bit of following every day. It was just, one after the other. It was every day you look at your phone, you're like, oh shit, there's another 60 followers, another 60 followers. And I don't pay for advertising. I try and make it as organic as possible. And, and that's what I'm about. I try and get as best engagement with people. I'm messaging people and, that's what I'm about. I want to make it, I'm in it for the long run. I want to try and make it, the best business I can, and I'm passionate about it, and I love doing it. That's as simple as it is.
Yeah, you can definitely tell, but we'll jump into more of that a bit later on when we dive into your socials side of stuff and how you're promoting things. But where are you from?
I am from Eastern Victoria, so born and bred, just pretty much an area out of the city from Victoria. I was very lucky. I grew up on an orchard. My grandparents were, born and bred. Grandma was a country girl and grandpa was the city boy, and he snatched the, country lady and they bought a bit of land closer to Melbourne, and we could grow up, very close to the city, but still on a bit of acreage. And that's where we, I was still around farming, and grandma's still got her dad's property up at Mount Beauty, and that's where, it all kind of stemmed from there, the hunting, and so that's where it kind of come from. Yeah.
That's awesome. And what do you do for work? You kind of mentioned there just before that you're a carpenter, is it?
Yeah, so I was, carpenter plus professional shooting as well as the tanning. So it kind of, three kind of things going on at the time, and the carpentry's been busy and the shooting was busy, and then the tannery just kind of took off, and I've had to push away from the professional shooting side of things because I found my passion really in the tanning and I really enjoyed it. So I thought, it was a double-edged sword where I was like, I'd had so much coming on that I'm like, I need to work out what I can focus on and be good at, and the tanning was what I'm good at, and I'm going to stick to it.
That's awesome. So did you get into professional shooting first or the tanning side of things first?
Yeah, so the professional shooting side of things is where the tannery business kind of stemmed. That's where the idea was born, because I saw these skins getting thrown in the bin after we'd go shooting. So we'd shoot on private property all across farms in Victoria, and heaps and heaps of fallow would be shooting. And I said to the guys that were skinning the animals out, they were using all the meat, obviously, for pet food industry. And I was like, what do you do with the skins? They're like, there's no market for it. So we just essentially had to just throw them in the bin. Like, we can't even do blood and bone, because blood and bones, essentially, they don't like the hides being in it. So it's, literally gets turfed. And I was like, shit, there's just, see a little idea there, like maybe I should take a couple. Plus I wanted some on my floor because I didn't really have a lot of fallow around. I always shot Samba because I'd never really had much private property access up until then to shoot fallow. So, and it was a dream of mine to have fallow on the floor. And that's where it kind of stemmed.
That's awesome. Yeah. You've got a few skins behind you for people that can't see, because it's not a video podcast, but yeah, that's awesome. How'd you find it getting into the tanning side? Because that's a daunting for a lot of people.
Yeah. So originally, do you want to know the funny story of how I actually got into it and like why I started it?
Yeah, man. Let's go.
Yeah. So I was essentially, I was single at the time, and I've gotten it to the point where I was like, lockdown, COVID, nothing to do. All I could do, we could still go shooting professionally because it was still an essential service. And I was like, sweet, got these hides. And then I was kind of like, anyway, there was this chance meeting with this girl that had come up past one of the farms and stuff. And, you know, she was attractive. And I was like, oh, shit, you know, kind of got her name, got her number and whatnot. And we started chatting and she was after a fallow hide because she knew I was hunting and what I was doing. She's like, oh, I really want this fallow hide. And I'm like, right, sparks in your idea. Straight away, I was like, sweet, I'm going to get it. I'm going to get this hide and I'm going to do it all costs. I'm going to learn this, get this tanning down. Cause I was kind of in like mucking around with it, but I wasn't being really much serious about it. And I was trying to get some, cause I was trying to get a good fallow hide for myself. I was like, right, I'm going to do this. So then I managed to get the hide and finally tanned it up and I got this, you know, attractive girl and I gave it to her and she paid me for it and it was nothing actually eventuated from it, but I just thought it was a really good story. It was just why I kind of got started into it. And then after she posted it up on her socials, I shared it. A few of my mates reached out and were like, oh, that's sick. Like, I want one. And then it was like, oh, you know, there's another person like, oh, you ever shoot one? Like, I want one. And then I was like, oh, shit. Okay, there's a real market here. And then that's how I kind of got into it. It was just, it literally was never going to, I never ever thought, if you had told me back then it was going to get to where it is now, there's no way I would have just laughed. I was like, are you serious? Like, I would have been super proud of myself, but it's to where it is now. I was just like, yeah, there was never the intention to be as big as it is and what I'm doing now to like 60 to 100 skins a year, easy kind of at the moment. Like, you know, I would have tanned already 40, 50 plus skins already this year. So like it's busy.
It's going to be a good year for you then.
Been a big year. It's always big. I'm always pushing. So yeah.
Yeah. It's funny. I kind of remember you started your TikTok channel. Like you had TikTok. We started chatting through when I was doing lives and then you started posting skins up and tanning and stuff like that. So you're right on the TikTok side of things early, getting the education side of things out there, which was pretty cool.
And that's what I forgot to mention too, like TikTok is where it blew up too, because it was quite a few viral videos. Like, you know, the series of, I put a full, you know, 4-part series of how to tan a hide on my TikTok and, you know, that would have, you know, well over, you know, 1.5 million probably views over all those videos, like easy. So, you know, there's a couple of videos there with like 600,000 views. And so like, there's so much interest in there. And I think people really like, you know, just think about it. Back in the day, everyone tanned hides and stuff like that. It's a real forgotten trade. So, and that's me. I'm just like, I like to learn stuff. I don't want to pay someone to do it. I want to learn how to do it. So, yeah.
So is there going to be any progression, you going from hides to taxidermy?
I'm not going to say no because look where it is now. So, but there is a definite progression on the education side of things. So that's currently in works at the moment with a guy that I met at the expo I'm not going to put too many details out there, but the education side of things is definitely moving along and having like a proper, you can come and have a full 2-day course, tanning, showing you how to skin an animal, the full prep on how to tan a hide properly and correctly. And, you know, and the whole idea of the program is to be a competent person to tan a skin by the end of that, to the weekend event kind of thing. So that's the progression at the moment. Taxidermy, I'm trying to bite as much as I can chew, and sometimes I'm chewing like a madman. So yeah, but I wouldn't have it any other way, and that's just who I am. I like to be busy. I like to be super busy. So yeah, otherwise you've got too much time to think.
Yeah, man, that's it. You can definitely tell you love what you do, and the educational side of stuff that you're doing through TikTok's pretty good too, because it, you know, like we said about the expo, it's showing people that hunters aren't just rednecks, you know. Like the crowd at the expo was awesome. Like it's not, it's what as a hunter you're expected, but it's not what, you know, people that don't hunt or have anything to do with hunting would have expected it to be like. It was bloody epic.
It was a real mix, like a real good crowd mix. Like it was, you know, people with their girlfriends, and you know, it was, you know, seeing girls in camo, it's awesome. Like that's what we want to see. You know, we want to see everyone getting around it. And like Mel and the team, like Angie from Mansfield Hunting and Fishing, like they those girls absolutely killed it. And like, yeah, chicks are leading the charge a bit at the moment. It's good. Like,
yeah, really it was good. So good. We should have seen you up there doing a skin fleshing demonstration up on the stage, mate.
Yeah, I had someone message me as well. They were like, one of the good guys that I've tanned hide. He's like, send me a screenshot. He's like, he saw the program. He's like, you should be doing this next time. I'm like, yeah, something I'd love to, but yeah, it's like I said, there's only so much I can give, and yeah, how much you can, you know, do in the one day. So
that's
yeah.
It. Break a skin out on stage.
Yeah. Get the grinder, sanding it, just shit going everywhere in the grass.
So you kind of mentioned that you kind of got into hunting in the outdoors through your grandparents' farm. How did it actually start? Where did the shooting side of things start and the hunting side?
I actually paid for a full guided hunt with Daniel from Ultimate Hunting Australia, who has the English pointers. So before he started like the full English pointers program, he was just doing guided hunts with your dog, and you could bring your dog, and I've a GSP. And that's where I started the hunting journey from there, because I always wanted to get into it. But then I was like, mates would be like, oh yeah, we'll go out, or, you know, like it just kind of never eventuated. And I didn't have any mates who were like probably like full serious into it. Like we were out shooting on, well, I was very fortunate. I had properties where we could go spotlighting and shooting, you know, roos and stuff like that. And, you know, foxes, but it was, I was always, I don't know, I just had this thing about like, I want to eat my own meat. I always wanted to like, it's, I don't know, it's just a weird bug that was like, I needed a, that primal instinct of going and, you know, harvesting food and the hunt and everything about it. Cause I used to ferret when I was a kid. So I'd run around with ferrets, and I'd go run the ferrets when I was, you know, I'd just climb across back people's backyards where I lived. It was acreage. So I just, and it was that era where you could literally just walk into someone's backyard and they go, what are you doing? I'm like, oh, I'm just ferreting it. Or they just come over and they knew what you were doing. So
that's awesome.
Yeah. Showing my age a little bit. So, yeah.
So the hunting side of things was for deer was quite late then, you know,
yeah,
teens or early 20s, whatever.
Yeah, I was early 20s. I didn't shoot my first deer. I think it was 2016, maybe something like that. I reckon it was not that long ago. And that was the thing. Like I don't have parents that were into hunting. It was more like, we were up at the farm, and grandma and grandpa, you know, they'd be cattle farmers. And then we had, you know, we'd be milking calves back down, you know, where we live, because they'd had a mum that had died or whatever. And then they'd raise that cow up on the property, and then they'd get a guy and he'd knock it over. And then that was where my memory of grandpa was laying out the skin and salting the whole hide to then get it taxidermied or getting it tanned. And then that hide's still on the floor at grandma's house at the moment, like, you know. That's kind of like evolved. I never had a real hunting person in my family. So
the skin side of things kind of come into as like a sentimental thing as well, seeing your grandfather salt the skin, and then that skin still being in your grandma's kitchen now.
Yeah, exactly. And grandma was awesome. She's a weapon. Like she'd just wring rabbits' necks. Like she'd set rabbit traps, and, you know, and just grew up with that kind of stuff around me. But no real hunters. No hunters at all in my family.
That's cool. And then, so how did you progress from shooting your first deer, going out on this this guided learning experience, to getting into professional shooting?
So it literally was one of those having a beer moments with a mate. So it was like we started shooting pretty seriously. I was trying to go out as much as I could after I'd done the program with Daniel with my dog, and I had a fair bit of success shooting some, you know, good sambar and cruising through paddocks and shooting roos with mates. And it evolved. A lot of my mates got out of shooting, and I kind of was like, I still want to keep doing this. And I kind of just went on my own. And then I met this guy at a party that I knew who he was, and I knew he was a shooter. So obviously you instantly connect with, I know he was a shooter. So like, we'll go start chatting. And we started then talking at the party, and we're like, oh, sweet. You know, you're into it. And then he knew that I had my grandma's farm to go to, and he's like, well, we should do a weekend away. And then we started going to like play. We had another place in Orbos that he had, and then there was another place he had in Yay. And so then we were going up up to the high country, grandma's up near Mount Beauty, and shooting up there. And then it was a case of he stumbled across a video of this guy who had the full harvesting rig, like the truck, and there was deer. He was shooting with thermal, and it was like, this is like, holy, like, this guy's serious. This is big business, kind of what this. He had a brand new, like, mat, like the full setup. And he's like, there's clearly money in this. Like, you know, we both ran our own little businesses, like trade businesses, and we're thinking, oh shit, there's some dollars in hunting. Like, we love doing it. Why don't we try and make some money out of it? And then we kind of started asking the questions. You know, this old farmer knew a guy that was into harvesting, and we got lucky. And one guy from our local area, or kind of close to us, he kind of took us under our wing and said, you know, this is what you got to do. Kind of pointed us in the right direction on getting started with the kangaroo harvesting, got our tickets, and eventuated to then shooting essentially whenever we could and wherever we could over 2020 through to 2023, so the last 3 years kind of thing. So yeah, that's where it kind of stemmed to.
Beautiful. And with the kangaroo harvesting side of stuff for the course and the licensing there, what goes into that?
So you have to drive, when we did it, it was a course in Hornsby, Sydney. So if anyone knows Sydney, the outlay of Hornsby, it's like full-blown suburbia, and there's a gun rifle range. It's so weird. It's this gun rifle range, and you have to do, essentially, it's like it's a safety course. Like, they don't teach you really much. It's just honestly a safety course, and then you have to fill out, do like a TAFE through TAFE, I think it was New South Wales, did an online course, and just answer a whole heap of questions, do a bit of research, and then you need to go out with a harvester who's actually got the ticket already. You video yourself gutting a roo, tagging a roo, cleaning, sanitizing knives, and send that video off with the TAFE course, and then you get your accreditation through the, accreditation, once you've got the sign off on TAFE New South Wales, you get your accreditation through Game Authority in Victoria to then submit for being a kangaroo harvester. So yeah, and then you need a Prime Safe ticket, which is all just stuff you got to pay for, and you get a Prime Safe vehicle, that kind of thing. So yeah, there's not too much involved, but there's a lot of, it's just steps you got to take, kind of thing.
And that was all for the dog food industry, or
That ticket was for dog food industry. At the time in Victoria, there wasn't really much human consumption. Now there is a few places do human consumption. It is a very hard game though. It's once we got into it in a really, really good time period, and the dollar and the roo was really good. Now it's start, and you ask anyone in harvesting, it's a hard game to make some money in it, and it's dropped a fair bit in price, and they're putting a lot of quotas on guys, and you can only shoot so many, and when you're only limited to so many, and that's the thing, that's just like, that's business at the moment with people not buying as much, you know, just what would you call it, a product that, I guess it's a luxury item if you're going to go buy kangaroo meat for your dog, and so people are just, you know, skimping on things like that, which is understandable with the cost of living with everything, and that's why the industry's struggling a bit. So yeah,
it blows me away with like the kangaroo numbers in Australia. Like going out today to my local block, you know, we've probably seen, you know, 18-ish deer, you know, and probably seen close to 150, maybe 200 kangaroos. Like, yeah, it's, yeah, just, they're in plague proportions. Yeah. Do you feel like it's slowed down to like these changes where, you know, like California isn't accepting any kangaroo products, and, you know, tarnish like Nike and stuff for using kangaroo products?
And that's where it gets me, like, it's wild because people don't understand, like, we should be using a resource that is so available. It is not. Like, they, on the quota for Victoria alone, they only allow to harvest 10% of the population. And you're like, And I think that's something unbelievable, the amount of roos that are in it. They have done surveys on Victoria, the amount of roos. I don't want to say because I don't want to be like, but it's millions. So they essentially, I think they're only allowing for about 100,000 roos to be harvested in the whole of Victoria. And that doesn't include that includes the whole, you know, there'd be allocations that they've given to farmers as well. So kangaroo, so for Central District, I think it was 30,000 tags for three months. So that's like 10,000 roos. And you can go out and shoot 100 roos, no worries, in a night if you're not really picking them up. But, you know, we'd shot six. Our record was 69 in a night. And that 69 gutted out on the ute. And, I mean, yeah, on the ute. So it was well and truly overloaded with 2 ton on the back. So, you know, in excess over 2 ton. So, yeah, and that's where people don't understand. Like, and if you're then using a product, this leather product, that there's a great market for it, there's plenty available, and now they're going to go find some other product from some overseas product that they're going to say it's ethical and all that kind of stuff. I don't think anything more ethical than if you're driving around on a farmer's property, and you see it, we'd go shoot properties that are covered in wheat and barley and canola fields, and you could see the damage the roos were doing, and the farmers were like, get rid of them because we're just getting hammered. And you could see, and fair enough, there'd be acres and acres of it just flattened by the roos, yeah, and eaten down, and then they're trying to get rid of these roos. So at least if we can get rid of that problem, at least use the whole animal, use the leather, the farmers are still going to shoot them at the end of the day. Like, they're still going to get permits to go shoot them. So we may as well use the product and use the whole product. And that's what I'm about.
That's it, man. Like, the roo numbers in Australia are just plague proportions. There's more water and more food for them than there ever has been in Australian history. And they're just more prevalent. You know,
and we are the cause of it too, because, you know,
that's what I mean. Yeah,
knock more trees down, we put more wheat fields in, and we need to stop. That's the consequence, and you've got to take up shit. Yeah, yeah,
that's it. You know, the numbers are like that, and taking out, what'd you say, 100,000 in Victoria? That's nothing. Like, with how kangaroos reproduce, that wouldn't even put a dent. That wouldn't even drop the numbers over there, which is just
doesn't. And that's the thing, and they stopped shooting the whole of northeast for like a full, it was over a full year. So, and when I say northeast, that's from like Seymour, which is like center of central Victoria, essentially straight line up to like Echuca. So like that's still classified as northeast district, all the way across to the Mitta valleys, you know, all that Kiwa, all pretty much almost Omeo. So like that's then classified as Gippsland. So like that whole area didn't get shot for a full year. They were not allowing tags. So you got to think, you give numbers, and they were like, all because of a fire that was like this small in a little pocket. And then that's, and you obviously you're just at the control of the government. And yeah,
it's a shame, because like, you look at all this push for culling deer. Yes, kangaroos are native. Yes, deer are introduced. But like, if you go around and look at the damage to especially farmers' crops, fences, stuff like that, the fences are destroyed, and it's not the deer that are doing it. I'm not sure what Sambra like with fences. You know, I haven't really had too much to do with them. But, you know, watching fallow here, they jump the fences, like even the does. And if they don't jump the fences, they're pushing through all the holes that kangaroos have put in the fences.
And that's grandma, like up at the farm there, you know, the amount of deer, we watch them on thermal. So we shot Samba. And that's the thing, I'm all about, you know, we got to take responsibility, going to control some numbers of the deer. And, you know, that's why I'm, you know, I'm all about telling everyone my product and how it is fully, it's a waste product. So, but seeing the deer itself, like, go, like, we'll see, and I explain that to farmers. I say, you know, obviously 25 Samba feeding out in one paddock. They are head down 8 hours a day eating. Like, so for 8 hours that night that they're available to sit on that paddock, they will eat, and their stomachs are chock-a-block. So we'll be shooting them, and then we've gutted them out before, split the belly open just to have a look at how much like clover and grass is in their gut. And it is just like, I'm just like saying to my mate, I was shooting, I'm like, imagine how much like every night that's coming off your paddocks. Like, don't worry about, you know, like, worry about the roos. It's the deer. It can be absolutely, like, menaces too. Like, Dennis, like, the amount they can eat is insane.
Well, I was speaking to one of the former podcast guests, Jody, and he is from Ireland. So he's done all the deer courses and stuff over there. And I can't remember if it was a fallow or a seeker consumes 7 or 8 kilos of grass a day or a night or something like that, which is just ridiculous. So you think of what a Samba can do. But the roos are just as, if not more.
Yeah, and then that's the thing. It's like the roos. It's like, and it's just the damage. Like and explaining that to farmers. I'm like, oh, I got a real bad roo problem. I'm like, mate, you got a real bad deer problem too. Like, it's both just as bad as each other. So, and yeah, explaining that to farmers, and that's what you see when I go out to some of these farms I've been to where the roo problems are exploding. So we were shooting this real big property in Wallen, which is north of the city, and the farm fences alone were only a couple years old because they'd been burned in the fires, and they were just absolutely torched by the amount of roos that run through that place. And we shot hundreds and hundreds and hundreds off that place just because we were consistently, we didn't really need to find many other properties just because it was so big and the amount of roos there, because obviously pushed so many houses out, and then so the roos get pushed out and then they become a problem. And then that's where people, like greenies, don't understand. It's like we are the cause of this problem. We've got to be smart about it, and that's what we've got to do. So, yeah.
So with the roo skin side of things, what's the go there? Are you allowed to harvest them and then tan them up? Or that's another license for that?
Another license. So because it's a native species, even though I'm a registered kangaroo harvester and I can go shoot a tagged kangaroo with my tag on it, bring it home to my house, eat that kangaroo, I can take it for you. So on when you log them into the app that you can use when kangaroo harvesting, it says taken for human, taken for own possession or something like that on it. I can literally take it to my house, eat the animal, and throw the skin in the bin, but I can't tan it. That's
such a waste.
Yeah, so I've got to pay an extra license. So it's like $600 or something a year just to tan kangaroo hides. That's how it works, the world.
Are you going to look down that path, or it's too much
effort? Yeah, it's something if people, maybe I'll do it 1 year and bite the bullet and just see if people buy them and people look into it and it's something they'd be interested in buying for sure. Yeah, I would if someone was interested, I'd definitely do it. Because
I know you see the roo skins at the airports and stuff, like in the international one, they're like, you know, real, real pricey compared to, you know, what you could probably sell them for.
Yeah,
and,
exactly.
You know, I could imagine like the overseas market in the areas that you can sell them to. I'm not sure if it's just California or the whole of America that are, I think it's just California that's banned roo import, like product imports. Thanks to what's her name, Georgie Purcell or whatever her face is from New South. Is she New South or Vic? There's two crazy ones. Vic, I reckon. Yeah. Georgie's from, and then you got the other crazy one in New South as well. You know, they're pretty.
I'm open to everyone's opinion on certain things, but also too, it's like you got to take in the facts and. You know, I'm very open-minded. I'm not going to be like closed off. I'm happy to hear anyone's opinion on anything, but as long as you're happy to reciprocate, essentially. So, yeah.
Yep, and facts over feelings when it comes to this type of stuff. As we were speaking before the podcast about the potential bow hunting ban here in South Australia and the duck hunting stuff in Victoria and South Australia, like, you know, we just had our open weekend here for duck, so we'll see how that goes off. I know there was a bunch of Victorians and that across the border for that. So,
it's a win. It's a real win, and that's what we need to do. And we need to keep the momentum going on it. And you know, 100 years ago, you know, hunting was everyone did it, and it's just now people are getting disconnected from what really happens. And you know, people have to understand. I don't know. It's the understanding of how passionate some people are, and there's nothing greater in the world. Like I've said to, like someone asked me, like, what's hunting for you? And it's like it's being able to just get up in that crack of dawn in the morning, throw the gun on the rifle and over the shoulder, and walk out into that misty grass, and And I don't even care if I don't shoot anything. It's more just like it's the thrill of the chase. It's everything that's involved in it. And if you do bowl something over, it's just an added bonus. And then taking that home and having the story is just, it's everything, you know.
So that's it. You're jumping ahead of me. That's my final question, mate. That's the go-to, your final question. You've ruined the podcast. Let's press stop now and throw it in the bin. Nah.
Sorry to ruin it.
Nah, it's all good, man. It's all good. It's good to see you jump into the good bits. But it is exactly what you said there. And, you know, like you were chatting before at the start of the podcast about the mental health side of things, you know. Like you're saying, everyone that goes out gets some type of mental health values out of it. There's like a reset and, you know, all the videos that I've been posting and a bunch that I've received, every single person talks about the mental health side of things, you know. Yeah. I've never really had to battle with mental health issues, but it could be because I'm out hunting and fishing so much. So
that's probably the honest truth, and that's, people have to understand, it's like, yeah, for me, it's that relaxation of, you know, your mind is so focused, especially on like trying to find that deer, where that is, where, especially because I've got Bowie as well. So my dog, like focusing on where he is and what he's scenting for. And your mind doesn't have time to be thinking about, oh, you know, what am I going to do tomorrow? It's not like, you know, what's on for work, you know, blah, blah, blah. I don't have a single thought of that. It's the getting outside in the fresh air. And that's what it is.
Yeah, man. 100%. Moving on a little bit. What would be your top beginner tip for someone getting into tanning skins, whether it's, you know, a main piece of gear you recommend, or, you know, as they're skinning the animal, what they should be doing to do it properly?
I guess the main thing is, it's, you gotta be, my main tip, I think, would be for a beginner person getting into skins and doing that kind of stuff, is obviously do a lot of research, take a little time to find maybe the technique you want to do and what style, and talk to people like myself or someone you may know that's done one or something like that. That's always going to be your first step if you can. But if you don't, yeah, it's a case of taking time skinning the animal, try and get as much of the meat off as you can with your knife. If you can have a pressure cleaner, you know, use it to, you know, keep out, like flesh out your hide with a pressure cleaner. But if you don't, you know, just take your time with the knife. Salting your hide is also, you know, just, and it's getting a kit. So I would recommend the Horns tanning kit from South Australia. So that'd be the go-to kit for, and that's the style I use. And it's probably the most really basic but foolproof method system on using for tanning. So that would probably be my tip. Go getting a South Australian Horns tanning kit, and I recommend everyone to them. So yeah, awesome. That would be my tip.
So with skin preparation, salting versus freezing straight away, what do you recommend best? You know, some people I've seen say don't salt and just freeze straight away. Some salt and freeze. Some salt and then wrap in a newspaper and store in a dry place. Like,
you're going to ruffle some feathers because there's people out there that swear black and blue, this is how I do it. There's no other way to do it. And you can't do it that way. You can do it this way. I don't really salt my hides at all. I'm all about just getting the hide, because obviously we were shooting them at night, and then we'd bring them back to the knackery. The guys would be coming in that morning, ripping the skins off the hides. And then I'd just say to them, chuck them in a plastic bag and put it in the freezer, which they had next to them, you know, because that's just speed and ease. And there's less likelihood of getting bacteria growing if you're salting. Problem is salting, especially because I'm tanning a skin that's then, you're essentially reintroducing moisture back into a hide. So, if it's fresh, it's already essentially wet, and that way it's can start soaking in the pickle and your tanning and stuff straight away. Whereas if you're essentially salting a hide, it's the same thing. It's preserving a hide for it getting prepped to be tanned. So essentially it's the same thing as putting in a freezer, but you're just using salt to then preserve that hide to then then you have to soak it, and then it takes, you know, it's going to still then rehydrate anyway. So that's where that argument kind of is. A lot of people obviously say, you know, you cannot tan a hide without it being salting. It's salting's one of the parts that's critical to it. Every hide behind me, which people can't see, is being freshly pulled off the animal and tanned straight away. So every animal behind me. So and I've done, like I said, I would have done out of the 70 odd I did last year, I think about 4 of them were salted hides. Yeah, so wow. And the ones, yeah, and the ones behind me would be in excess of over 3 years old and have no hair problems and hold up beautifully.
That's awesome. So, that's good to hear. What about, like, I've seen you do a couple videos on TikTok about people sending you hides. What's the best way for someone to go about that if they want one done?
The best thing you can do is, so if you've ever like skinned a lamb or something like that and you can pull the hide off, is the best thing to do. So if you can get the hide up high, it's the best thing too. Like getting it hung up, like using a gamble hook, like up off the ground is the best thing you can do straight away. That is hands down the best thing, because so many guys skin them on the ground and it's like you're trying to roll the animal over and it's like you might miss and you'll go too far with a knife and you nick into it and it's creating more dramas. The best thing you can do is start on the right foot, get it up high, start from the top, work your way down to the bum with the knife, using the knife to get it all the way down there. Cut your center line through the animal from their pretty much from their asshole through to the bottom end of their neck. So, and using the belly as nice straight cut, that like straight consistent cut from pretty much their neck all the way up to their asshole, and keeping that nice and straight, and then just running the knife down that cut just a little bit on each end, and then down the arms, and then running the knife just in a little bit on those arms as well, just to open the cuts up that you've done. And then essentially, if you've got a second person there, you should be able to just, on especially on a fallow deer, you can just pull it straight off, same with like sheep. I haven't done a goat, honestly, but goat's probably pretty similar. And just the less you cut into the hide, the better, because if you're breaking into the hide, you cut into the hide, you're creating a weak spot on that leather. So then I have problems when I'm cleaning that hide off, it creates a weak spot and then creates holes. So I'm more about people just being as quick as they can to get it off and get it into a plastic bag, get the air out of it and straight into a freezer. And then that way you don't have to worry about salting, because then with the salting is, because obviously with salting, you got to salt the hide. And then, you know, if you don't know what you're doing, it can create problems where, like, you know, people don't realize the fat doesn't dehydrate when you salt it. So they don't take enough fat off. And then say if you shoot a fallow, like borderline, you know, early December, and it's fattening up, it's covered in it. So you're going to have to cut heaps off. So then that means you're going to have more time with the hides exposed to the elements. Whereas I'm just like, just put it in a bag, freeze it. So that's kind of like that thing where I'm always about like freezing is better than salting. Yeah. But I know there's guys out there that are like, you have to salt it. And yeah, that's each their own. That's just how I do it. If you want to do it that way, that's fine. So yeah.
So you mentioned something there. When you're hanging them, are you hanging them from their front hocks or their back hocks?
The back hocks, yep. Yeah. So yeah, back hocks. And the head facing down to the ground. So in that way, especially when you would know, like you're hanging them up, at least the blood's all going out through the front of the rib cage and everything like that. So you're getting away. And that's the other thing too. If you're laying a skin on the ground, it's more chance to get blood, urine. That's the stuff that causes your problems. So then if you're salting it, the problem is I look at it and go, oh, well, I've got this skin on the ground that's, you know, is there blood on the ground? Is there urine on the ground? And then it's going to lay in that. And then it's already in the hide. And then it's like, I'm going to lay the next 3 days in salt and then hope that it's not going to give me issues. So, yeah, that's me personally. I've just had a couple issues where people have salted it and I can tell. I'm like, that's just been missed completely. And especially on the edges and up around the neck, and it'll be all you've lost hair up on the top. And I want to give people the best opportunity to give me the best hide and with the least amount of effort, because people are time poor or they're misinformed, and that's where I'm just like, salt it, easy, done. That's my theory on it.
Yeah, that's it. It's just, I wasn't sure just how you said something about how it was hanging. And I know that some guys for meat hang it from either the waist or the front legs to use the weightier side of stuff help break down the meat side of things.
Yeah, right.
And I've heard a couple podcasters talk about that, so that's just why I was clearing up on that. And yeah, if I can, and there's a way for me to hang the animal, that's how I do every single animal. It's just, you know,
If you were breaking one down, would you hang it from
100%. It from the back hocks and whether it's a deer, goat, whatever. If I can hang it, I'm gonna hang it. If I need to get the car in and I can, you know, chuck the gamble in and throw the rope over a branch and pull it up, or if you know, there's three of us there or two of us there, one holds the animal up in the air and the other one ties it off.
Yep.
I'll always try. I hate working on the ground.
Yeah, it's so shit on the ground, and it just changed your life. And you show so many people, and you're like, and they're like, oh, why didn't I do this? You know, and you're like, yeah, why didn't you have one of these years ago? Especially because you can just chuck one in the, you know, in the toolbox on the underneath your car or behind a seat, like under a seat. It's no excuse not to, I reckon, to have one in your ute at least on you when you go on hunting, I reckon. So
yeah, I got the plastic one because my first job outside of school was the abattoirs, so they just had piles of broken ones when the plastic ones broke, and I just grabbed a bunch of the broken ones, and I've still got two or three, and I reckon the one I've had's gone to New Zealand twice, it's gone to Texas, Mexico, every state I've hunted over here, it's gone, like every single hunting trip. It's and if there's a tree somewhere I can hang it, I'm hanging it. So I definitely recommend gambrels for that. And if you're looking for some, head over to your website.
It's coming. The website, literally, I just finished it off this week, so it'll be up there on my stainless steel one. So
yeah, they're cool. I checked them out when we were at the expo there. You were pretty proud of them. They
There's R&D's been into them, so there's, you know, everything I do too, like that same setup I've ran for 3 years in our harvesting, and we've skinned Samba with it, and anyone knows the skinning a Samba is an absolute mission. So yeah, how'd you go with your first Samba? Saw it after the deer expo, your one that you shot.
Yeah, so it wasn't my first Samba. Samba, but it was my first daytime Samba, my first stalked daytime. hunted one. So the first one I shot was on private property in Gippsland, spotlighting for a farmer over there many years ago. Yeah. So I got one under the light there, and you know, it was always like he's up here on the wall, but I've always, like, you know, I've shot a Samba, but I've never really hunted a Samba. So it was pretty good to get out. I seen, you know, a good 20-ish fallow while we're out, seen a couple of bucks, and you know, the main mission for me was meat, but I wanted to get a Samba, so I let a dozen fallow walk that were under 30 to 140. There was a young buck that I had a perfect broadside shot at, and I just let it walk, and ended up shooting her at 30 meters with the 300 in the neck. She stood up and barked, and I just seen the back of the ears, and just shot her in the neck, dropped her on the spot. So
yeah, I saw you had it all cut up for the boys at work, and that looked bloody delicious. Like, there was some good feed you were, you know, dishing out for the guys at work. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, so like over here, you know, it's Victoria's common for hunting compared to South Australia because you've got so much public land. So these guys are all pretty much city guys. They haven't had much to do with any of that type of stuff.
Yeah.
You know, the guys that have been there for a while, they get venison every year. When I shoot a few deer, I'll bring in excess and give them some to take home, and I'll cook some up while I'm at work. But yeah, this time I took a back strap in and cooked it all up and nice and steaks. I cooked the heart up, and I went around like the first day, gave everyone back steaks and heart, and you know, they're like eating it, and they're like, what's this cut here? This is the best cut. I'm like, that's the heart. And they're like, oh, this is amazing. It's so tender. It's so nice. There was a couple guys that didn't like it. One of the guys ate it, and because he knew what it was, he was gagging while he was eating it. It was just a mind over matter thing. And then I...
It's underrated, very underrated organ, underrated.
I love it, man. It's so good. Yeah. You know, like that's my... The rut's...
That's your go-to?
The rut's my favorite time of year because it's cold. You get those real crisp mornings. And if you shoot a deer, I take the heart out. I take the liver out straight away. I take the kidneys. I don't normally cook the kidneys up straight away. I normally leave them, but I'll get a tenderloin, a heart, and the liver, cut it all up, chili, mushrooms, onion in a fry pan, and just cook it all up together. And that's like the best breakfast to have after a hunt. It's so good. But yeah,
I'm the slice the heart with grilled halloumi, like grill it up and then grill it and then like make like a biscuit almost out of it and then just eat it like that. That's pretty elite. That's pretty good.
How good. Yeah. And then I did the ceviche for the guys with the
That looked good.
With the rocket and the capers. So that turned out really, really good. They're like raw venison, like raw meat. Yeah. We're not eating raw meat. I'm just like, just trust me. Just try it. Like, do you eat sushi? Oh no, not really. Well, just try it anyway. Like, make sure you grab some of the rocket and the capers and the sauce. Like, it was like shallots and lemon juice and a bunch of other things that I mixed up in a blender. I did a trial for myself the night before and then, did it on a big scale. And then all the guys, as they come through back from the trucks during the day, I'd like just do a plate for themselves. I had all the meat all diced up, all sliced up thinly.
Yeah.
And And then the youngest, he freaking loved all the leftovers. So
he loved it. Yeah, it's good. It's real good. It's the best part of it, just being able to, pull shit out of the fridge and know that you've taken it, and that's the best part of it all.
Oh, sharing it with people that don't get to experience. That's what I like about it. That's for sure. So, what would be your top five items for a beginner getting into self-tanning? Like, you said this tan kit and you said the Gambrel. Apart from those, what else would you recommend that would make life easier when it comes to like skinning and just prepping skins?
Look, it'd be, I guess, if you're getting involved, if you're going to get into it, probably good safety equipment too. So make sure you got your gloves and stuff that's going to protect you from it. Good knives. Don't go too overboard. I just run a straight fixed 6-inch F-dick knife that pretty much you see at any butcher's. Like, you don't have to go out of town and getting some, skinning knife and whatnot. I do everything with that. Like, it just, people get sold, you got to buy this. You just keep it simple, stupid. It's really basic. Just I buy my pool salt from bloody Bunnings. It's, I guess the five things would be, just a good quality 6-inch knife. Probably if you can, just get your, I think it would be, if you want to, you can get a fleshing knife set up and do that from home. If you can't get a pressure cleaner to do your hides that way. Number one, probably the other thing too would be pH level. So getting a pH reader. So your pH is really important with any taxidermy, as any taxidermist person knows, or tanning, pH is really important. Taking your time and always, especially with my method, you can't overdo it. So that's the other thing too. You can always underdo it, but it's always better to just put a bit more salt in, put a bit more chrome in. It won't affect it. It's always when you go under is a massive problem when you get hair slip. So if you don't put enough salt in, or if you don't put enough chrome in, you don't put enough aluminium in there, that'll give you problems. So that's probably another big tip too. So that'd be kind of like where I'd stick to people, yeah.
What about seasons? The best time of year to get a fallow or deer for the skin? I know like you had several winter coats and summer coats and autumn coats. What's your favorite and what looks the best?
Yeah, so best chocolate coats are always in winter. The thickest coats, they're super lush. They're gorgeous to stand on. Absolutely fantastic. Orange, they're your Spanish fallow or whatever you call them, and then you got like your European fallow style with your reds, conventional orange. Menal. Yeah, that orangey, reddy kind of spotties. They never ever get thick coats in winter. They just essentially lose their spots, and they are always best in summertime. So best time to get them is definitely in those, especially middle of winter and middle of summer is the best time. It's the in-between periods where you can get problems. So when they're coming out of winter, coming into summer, they'll be shredding hair and they'll be literally losing hair left, right, and center. It's honestly just go get me. Don't even. I've tried cutting them. Like, holy moly, there's just hair going everywhere, and I was just like shocked how much it loses, especially when it starts molting. And then especially coming in from the autumn coats. So there's summer coats. The autumn coats can be like, if you're into it, they can be almost fluffy and they're like weird kind of looking. So they can have that change where they're getting their coats coming through. So, but it's always just stick to the middle of summer and middle of winter and you won't have an issue. So that would be my tips for best hides if you want, if that's what you're chasing.
And for patterns, and what do you recommend, bucks or does?
Oh, does always are going to be a softer skin. Like they're definitely for pliable skins, and especially if you don't have a fleshing machine. So obviously, you know, you'll see taxidermist guys, they'll have a fleshing machine. To get a really, really big buck, flat and beautiful and supple, you need to flesh the hide with a like a thinning machine, so fleshing the machine out. So you stick to your does, you won't have a problem, and they'll stay nice and flat. You'll get a really good result out of them. And that'd be my tip with people. If you're shooting does, and that's the thing, if you're shooting, you know, doe, you muck it up, who cares? Go get another one. Like, just keep trying. That's what I did. I failed. I failed so many times. I had skins go hard on me, and it was like they went full legit. Like, it was total write-off, hair falling out of them, total shit, like, turf them in a bin. Just kept doing, kept going, kept trying.
And pressure cleaner-wise, is there a certain – I don't know how pressure cleaners are rated, but is there a certain, you know – one that's more powerful than another that you need, like a certain number that you have to look out for?
Yeah, you kind of want a minimum of 2,500 PSI. That'd be my minimum. Another thing too, like, you don't have to go buy one. Go hire one from Kennards or go hire one from a hire
store. Car wash.
Yeah. Car wash. That's gold. Didn't even think of that. But if you and your mates got a few hides together and you're like, shit, we'll have a go at this. Let's get two or three hides together. Let's go put in for a pressure wash for the day, or surely be someone you might know. If you know, me myself, I'd know someone you know friends with, you could borrow it for the day, and just, and it'll change your life, like just fleshing a hide that way. So yeah, and then the quicker you can flesh a hide after you've shot it too, the better. Like, you can do it the same day, you could flesh that hide and be straight into a pickle, straight away tanning, going for broke on the hide. Or if you don't have the time, freeze it, bring it out on the weekend, the next following weekend, defrost it in your pickle, and then start fleshing it. But the main thing is, if you're doing it that way, defrosting it out of the freezer, is to do it fast. Don't let it sit there for a day and a half or 2 days and it's finally defrost. It's like, that's where you get issues. It's all about speed and just making sure the sooner the hide can get pickled and preserved, the hair will lock in. And that's the tip. Like, that's the golden. And that's hard when you say, like, what's your five tips? It's like it's really hard to kind of like put it, because every step's really critical, but it's simple. It's very simple. Like, it's just being fast with your skinning on a hide, making sure you get it frozen quick or get it into a pickle quick. Fleshing it correctly too is very important. And then making sure that you overdo your quantities, if anything.
Yep.
Don't underdo it. And make sure you spend enough time with the hide in the chemicals as well. So then it's preserved enough, it's softened enough in the tanning, and then it's stretched out and it hasn't dried out too much before you put your fat liquor on it. So then your fat liquor's on and it's still wet. And it's just like, it's very simple steps, but it's just like everything has to be done to a T. And they're not complicated, but that's what's going to give you the best result. Simple as that.
No, that's awesome. Yeah, funny thing with the car wash, pressure washer, I had a mate that used to soak his heads in water until they went rancid, and then he'd shoot off to the car wash and line all his heads up in the car wash and spray them, blow all the fat and gunk off.
Hey, at least it's not his house, you know? Whereas I'm going to have to do that crap at my house and clean it up. Shit.
Yeah, I felt sorry for whoever went through next, slipping on fat and shit, you know. It'd be a hell of a sight, that's for sure.
Mm.
What about like fox skins and that? Have you looked into doing like fox skins, or it's too...
I don't get a lot dropped off. I really don't. And I've really kind of marketed a lot of my stuff to doing fallow hides, just because I'm...
They're fallow hides.
especially around me, it's like you drive an hour from me, and you can shoot fallow if you have the property, you know, 20 minutes from, 10 minutes drive from my house kind of thing. It's still strong Samba country, but over the dividing range, it's like you drive into any of those properties in there and the fallow numbers are just exploding. So that's awesome. That's where it's, yeah.
Not
and
great, easy, but it is awesome at the same time.
It's great. It's great for hunters, absolutely. But farmers are like, yeah. But it's still interesting. You still go to farms where the farmers are like, I want you to shoot every roo, but don't touch deer. Don't touch deer. That's like my golden rule. There's farmers out there that will probably make you sign a stat deck almost to say don't touch the deer. So yeah, there's still guys out there because they'll have guys that are, you know, they'll pay them to then come shoot them on the property. So it's a win-win, like, you know. So
that's it. What about zombie apocalypse weapon? What would be your go-to?
I've had a good thought. I reckon, especially in Victoria, like in Australia, because we don't have any semis and stuff. But I reckon the pump action Remington police rifle, with like somehow you could get, you know, good mags, you can get, and then like a short sight on it, like a red dot. And I reckon, but then obviously you're making a lot of noise because obviously zombies are then attracted to the noise. So then crossbow would be pretty cool. But then I'm no good with that kind of stuff. So then it's like, oh, do you just go like close combat, you know, with a sword or something like that? Depends how quick the zombies are really too. There's so many factors you can't, you know, you got to weigh into.
Yeah, there's too many of.
There's too many. What would be yours? What's your go-to?
Oh, shit, mine changes all the time. But because I'm such a Walking Dead nerd, I like the whole crossbow side of things, you know, or even just bow in general. But speaking of the pump action rifles, I've seen Wedgetail Industries one. Like, is it the Taipan or whatever? Yeah. You've got the Wedgetail one. That looks pretty badass.
It's a pretty cool piece of kit. Yeah. And then as soon as they bring it out, it's like New South Wales. Were they trying to ban it or something? It's like,
well, that's what I just brought up. I got sent. Yeah. You know how I started that little Hunting Connection chat thing on channel for just for updates for this type of stuff for people who you know want to keep up to date with it and you know email their MPs and stuff like that. I got sent one straight away as soon as I opened it up about the Wedgetail pump action, about it, you know, being banned in New South Wales, Tasmania, and the ACT, and then the Victoria, Queensland, South Australia, and Western Australia, and Northern Territory, you know, trying to ban it. So
let's just hope they don't realize like what a lever action is. So
That's it.
What would I know? But
but for the people interested, head over to the Wedgetail_Industries Instagram, and then they've got a thing up there just saying email your state MPs. They've got an email to share your responses with them as well so that they can see it. That's hello@guncontrolaustralia.org. So, get over there and do that. That's the only way we can fight these things is sending mass emails to these MPs to show them that, you know, we don't want these things to disappear.
Yeah.
So, sorry I went down that tangent, but my head when you said pump action.
No, it's good. It's a good thing because, it's a clear example of, like, what the unions obviously did in Victoria and banded together, and that's power in numbers and, you know, if you've got the money behind you, like the unions do, that's the pull you can do, and that's how it works.
And that mail the MP thing, like so many people there that complain, and then you message them, have you mailed your MP? No, I haven't. I'm not going to. Why should I? Because that's the people that you have to tell these things to, no matter what the issue is. So even if you're not getting the response you want, organise a meeting with your local MP to get these things. So South Australian people, go into your local MP office, wherever you are, go organise a meeting. Say, hey, I'm not standing for this bow hunting ban. I'm not standing for helicopter culling of deer in South Australia parks. You know, I'm standing for duck hunting. You know, go tell these people, make them listen. That's the only way.
And you see the helicopter shooting. Everyone knows if you send in a good hound crew, and those hound crews, they know how to clean up deer. And that's like put in a ballot. Like, you know, there's got to be ways we can do it better. Like, do it better together. And you know, everyone should be putting their bid in to help. And I get, you know, you go to New Zealand and you know, if anyone's never been to New Zealand, the hunting culture over there is just, it's amazing. Epic. Like, it's amazing. And that's how we should be, you know. We should, you know, they got suppressors and, like, it's just, it's cool. Like, it's just, it's how it should be because they're just passionate about it. And, you know, I guess Aussies are just a bit like, oh, yeah, she'll be right. It's like, no, let's make a stand on stuff that we should be standing on, you know.
Yeah, it's like I've been posting this Shooters, Fishers, Farmers party stuff the last couple of days, and I'm getting comments like, oh, you know, this guy's against that. This guy sided with Labor for this issue, and he didn't stand with farmers for this issue. And it's like, you need to realize how politics works. They need to take some wins and take some losses and team up with other people so that they can get bills done for us. You know, who cares that they're wanting semi-automatics and stuff like that? I want semi-automatics, you know. You should be able to own, if you're proving yourself to own a firearm in Australia, you should be able to pretty much own what you want. You know, you've proven yourself, you know. You know, we should have it all. We should be allowed to go hunting with semi-automatics. We should be allowed to take a handgun hunting if we want to, you know. How badass would it be to hunt Samba deer with a revolver with a scope?
It would be next level. It would be different in a different world. But, like, also too, part of me is like, all right, like, I'm happy to not have semis if it means they don't take more stuff from us. That's the thing. Like, I'm in a vote of like, all right, that's just how our rules are going to be. But it's like, you can't just keep chopping and changing. And that's my personal opinion. It's like, look, there's too many, I feel like, yeah. And that's the problem. It's the crazies that ruin it for everyone. So if you keep the hands out of them, you know, on semis and stuff like that, but that's just my opinion. And, you know, as people out there, like farmers, yeah, they need semis because they're shooting ducks by the thousands because they're on their rice crops or something like that, or you got rabbits in plague proportions and they need the semi shotty, all for it. That's where we need them. That's where we need them, exactly where we need them. And that's the thing, if you do the right steps and, you know, if it's regulated well, then, yeah, we could do it. But that's the thing. It's just, we live in this world where everything's getting taken a bit too far. So it's just sometimes we need to step back. You know, fight for what we want.
Yeah, unfortunately, the more we let them put these regulations in and take, they're just going to take and take. So we need to, fight back somehow politically, you know. Like, even with this Shooters, Fishers, Farmers party stuff, I've been putting out, you know, go up, become a member. I've got a bunch of stuff on the Instagram, sharing it around. Sign up to Shooters, Fishers, Farmers party, you know. Get the people in power who you want. So that they can put these things through and put your voice through. So, but moving away from the political side of stuff, because I hate politics, but it's getting more and more freaking...
It's getting more involved, though. That's the problem. It's getting more... Yeah. No, moving away.
Like, I've got a group chat with a bunch of the podcasters and we've called it the hunting podcasts of the round table, you know, because we're just discussing all of this this stuff just constantly, and like how we can work around it and, you know, get people to do shit. You know, hunters seem to be the loudest on social media complaining about it, but not the loudest where it needs to be. So moving on, what have you forgotten on a hunting trip, or even like with your pro being a pro shooter, you've got out to your block, you know. What have you forgotten?
It happens all the time, but the best, and I was thinking about it when you told me before this, there was a time when we pulled a rifle out and there was no bolt in the actual rifle because he'd cleaned the rifle and then he left it back at home, and then we're just like, we're standing there with literally a gun, and all we could do is beat each other over the heads with it, and that was it. What's another shocker? We had heaps, just because, especially when you're professionally doing it, it's like you might be like rushing through the week, you know, to then go shoot out on the weekend or somewhere, and you're trying to get so much equipment organized for it. It was like you hit points where you're like, you know, they've got so many things. You might have bipods, guns, thermals, you know, you got binoculars, you got, you know, the knives, have they been sharpened? You got to make sure that, you know, have you chucked the hopper choppers back in from when we used it in the buggy or something like that? Or there's a case of, you know, you just end up bringing five of everything because just in case if you've forgotten. But it's always something like that. But, yeah, it'd be probably the the bolt out of the gun was probably one of the best, I reckon, I can remember where.
That's a pretty common one, especially in states where you have to remove the bolt out of the gun, you know.
But that's the thing, we don't have to do it in Victoria, so that's probably why it's more, I understand if you're in New South Wales, like, and I don't know the other rules, but yeah, I thought that was pretty funny, so yeah.
What about the most sketchy or dangerous thing that's happened to you when you've been out hunting or professional shooting?
I have stories, but I cannot tell them publicly because they're some real shockers. But probably the worst one to date. We were harvesting roos all night long, and it's a classic example. Learn you're a young bloke and you think you're invincible. And I'd worked that day. Then we drove all the way up, like nearly over 2 hours to get to this spot, and we're harvesting on these wheat fields. And we knew there was heaps of roos there. And we shot nearly, I think that was the night where we shot over 55 roos or something like that. And anyway, I jumped in the car to drive home, and we'd loaded everything up, and guy was with me. He's like, yeah, no worries. I'll take the first 20 minutes. I'm going to just try and get as far down the road as you can without me trying to, like, you know, fall asleep. And then, yeah, so start cruising down the road. He's nodded off, and then I'm cruising along, and then the eyes get drearier and drearier. And then all of a sudden I woke up to the jolt of the car, and the car crossed over the other side of the road. Then, you know, big overtaking signs with three poles that say overtaking, you know, in 300 meters. Yeah. I woke up to that steering wheel and me facing that and just plowed through the whole thing. I've got the sign in my front yard. Like, I full can prove this. Plowed through the whole sign, fully, like, I woke up at that point, and then it was like 80 k's an hour. I was white knuckled across the road, like drifting and sliding across the road. Somehow by miracle, I've slid into this nice, real, beautiful spoon drain that's not, like, it would have been at least probably 10 meters wide, and it was just beautifully placed. There was no drains. It was just a real nice, shallow spoon drain, and it was all grassy, and it was like the front of this vineyard where, like, obviously they were trying to maintain it, make it look beautiful, and I just went in there and just lost control of the car, but still kept it upright, didn't tip the car, didn't do nothing.
Very lucky.
And then on the left-hand side of the road was full covered in trees, like, you know, hit one of them, game over. So, yeah, that was one of the most scared moments of my life. We'd be in the top three, so yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we've all done those push-through drives, you know. It's definitely dangerous. I remember, you know, doing I think it was an 18-hour trip up to New South Wales. Think it was up Murundi Way with a couple mates, and went up there and had access to a private block. And, you know, we hunted up there for the weekend. I think we left Friday, drove the 18 hours, got there Saturday morning, Saturday, Sunday, and then drove back for work. I think it must have been a long weekend or something, because we had work Tuesday. So we got back, you know, early hours on Monday morning, and it's just, same thing, like just swapping drivers constantly, trying to stay awake and, you know, dosing with caffeine. Like we're all silly.
Doesn't work. And that was our rule after that. It was like, you know, if you are tired, you just pull over and fall asleep. Like, and I did it. It's always, and then from then on, I just did the old, I remember coming home one night, I was harvesting and I was only 20 minutes from home, like, probably less. And it was like, I know that I am pushing it right now. I'm just going to, and then I ended up pulling over the side of the road and had 20 minutes snooze. Like, even though I was 20 minutes from home, it was just like, I learned a lesson, not worth it at all.
It definitely helps, you know, some of those power naps can be a lifesaver, that's for sure. Yeah. What about top five dream animals? Anywhere in the world, money's not an issue. Do you have like a list of animals that you would like to go hunt?
It'd definitely a moose, definitely be up there. A bear, especially, and that's the thing, like, you would have asked me when I first started hunting, like, bear, I wouldn't want to shoot a bear because that whole mentality of like it being like being a toy and like that thing, whereas teddy now bear. Like being, the teddy bear, but now I'm like understanding like the numbers and the control of them and stuff like that. I'd be like, yeah, bear would be very cool to knock one of them. And obviously the taste, because they talk about it so highly.
And the skin.
Something I was guys I'd met they went shooting. I think it was in like China. It was like South China, and they were something like they were shooting elk, I think, out there. So it was weird, as like they were in this whack ass part of the world, and I'm like, something like that would be really cool. Shoot some like exotic bird or exotic animal just somewhere, like,
yeah. I think they've more got, I think they call them like morel or something over in, yeah, in China,
yeah. Yeah, something like that. Just like something real, just obscure, would be something more so than just doing the, you know, the generic, you know, moose hunt and elk hunt and something like that. That'd be like, especially if you did like a, like, it'd probably be another one would be, I really do want to knock off the species of Australia. Like, it's just,
don't we all?
It is, yeah, like, knocking over a hoggy would be cool. I mean, hoggy territory. You know, it's just getting the time. I don't know
what that's like.
Yeah. And that's the thing, you take it for granted. So, yeah, so it's just that. It's doing all the species would be an absolute dream to of mine as well. So
you got, yeah, private access for hoggies over there? I might have to hit you up. Come see you next April.
We might kind of have access. We've tried there. And, yeah, you talk to a farmer next door, he's like, well, are there those little sambas? I'm like, yeah. He goes, yeah, I've shot a few of them. I'm like, oh, God, don't say that. That's the attitude.
I get these midget deer roaming around. What's wrong with them?
Big old school farmer.
Classic. What about your go-to thing to cook with hunted game?
Go-to would be, I love the front shoulder, like slow cooked in a pot, just cook that thing for like 4 hours. Oh, cook it for like, you know, 12 hours, just then like pulled pork and then,
yeah,
pull it out, reduce it down and then reintroduce like moisture back into it. And that's like a real go-to. The heart, yeah, obviously very underrated organ. I do love just mincing a whole heap and just doing, I do really good mean ass rissoles that I'm, you know, pretty good at. So, but, and that's the thing, speed, like I'd love to do more sausages and stuff, but it's just, it can be a mission to do it all. I've got the cool room and stuff, so I can do it all, but it's just trying to find that time, especially with that's what I'm it. Doing now. So a lot of the time I end up just pulling the mincer out, mincing a heap, and that gets me through.
Do so, you yeah. add fat when you're mincing, or you? Because some people love adding fat to it. I'm just plain venison mince, not adding.
Yeah, I'm a plain against it. Venison. If it snags, yeah, obviously getting the fat in there, pork fat, or lamb trim. But if it's plain mince, I want to eat pure. Those good for B vitamins that that's are in it. Venison. So you know, I'm the same.
Yeah, the taste is, I find the taste much better. Yeah, it doesn't, but it makes a mean spaghetti bolognese.
Yeah, yeah.
So good. So how do you see the public views on hunting and hunters?
I feel like it's changing a bit. Like, I feel like it's definitely still a strong community, but I think the feel is still... Yeah, there's still a lot of extreme views on it, and I think the best we can do as education as hunters is show the passion that we're involved in it, and not so much being smart too. Like, you know, I think so many guys put up – I've seen professional hunters put up full headshot ruse and all this stuff, and I'm like, mate, just don't – be smart. Be smart about it. Like,
yeah.
let's be smart and – show that we're cooking it. Like, yeah, and people will be like, you know, they shouldn't be getting offended by that. But it's like, yeah, mate, but people do. And let's be, you know, above that and be, you know, let's, you know, you're posting up on social media, that gives them the evidence and that gives them the ammo. So that's where we can hopefully change the view of people, like, and show hunting in a, you know, what's involved. Like, you always show it with your kids and your kid and all the rest of it and your mates and you're getting around and all the, you know, the fish you're shooting and how good that is. Like, that's what we should be doing. That's take it in a positive step.
I'm guilty of posting headshots and, you know, all of those, you know, like when you're first getting into it, social media, absolutely. You know, you like, same, like to share like a,
yeah,
it's not funny, but like, you know, you shoot something and it's it's a really good headshot and the eyes pop out or something like that. Yeah. Sharing and like, I'm guilty, but that's the thing.
I think it's just because I know there's people out there going to be like, oh, well, that's their problem. It's like, yeah, but let's, if it means that, you know, we can post hunting in a more positive light, bloody oath.
And that's it. Like I had much the same mentality when I first saw it. It's like, oh, hey, I'm posting it here. Like, you don't have to see it. Don't unfollow me, you know. If you don't want to see what I'm posting, unfollow me. But, yeah, my attitude's changed on it. But, you know, then again, like, I don't do it with mammals, but I'll show a headshot fish that I've shot, you know, with the arrow sticking out their head. And, like, it's like...
And that's the thing, like, it's that...
Where do you draw the line?
It's a standard where, like, you know, you look at all these spearfishing people online and they've got huge followings and it's like, you know, I'm some bikini babe that's shooting, you know, spearfishing fish and it's like it's all good and accepted and stuff. But it's like if we showed a video of, you know, us blowing a, you know, head off an animal live and it's like it's just, you know, the worst thing ever. So... Yeah,
it's the whole eyelashes argument. Anything that has eyelashes.
Exactly. and then you just got to deal with it. That's just life. You just got to deal with it.
And how would you change the public views on hunting and hunters?
I think you got to add the story behind it and what you're about. And, you know, like we were saying, how like sharing your meat is some of the best things ever. And like, you know, what it brings like families together. And, you know, the people that go duck, they go duck hunting opening every year for the last X amount. And they got like a, you know, I've seen guys with, they have like a full photo album of every photo they've taken of the first opening of the duck. And it's like, it's the event. And it's like, it's not even about the hunting. It's about getting together as mates and that, and showing that side of, you know, how good it is for your mental health and how exercise is, you know, really key, really, really key to a good mind, strong mind. So that's what I'm about. I'm about exercising and staying fit for the hills. And when I do get the chance, it's like, it's maybe that's that perception we can change with people and showing that, you know, it's showing the animals we're harvesting, but in a really positive light and not, you know, and filter out the people that are, kick the people off that are doing the wrong thing too, like that are, you know, and call them out for it too. Like as hunters, be like, hey, you know, send, if they're posting up stuff, it's, you know, you're like, hey, that's okay for me because I'm a bit desensitized to it. But hey, call a mate out and say, look, that's the kind of shit that gets us in trouble, you know, as well. I've seen it on root harvesting pages too. Like I've seen guys post up videos and it was good because the guys that commented on it saying, pull this shit down. And they were other harvesters being like, take the shit off. This is what they use against us. So, and most guys, 95% of guys doing the right thing. And they are. They all are. But it's just the odd bunch that you just like, you just shake your head at. So, and I've done it. I've called out another harvester that he was posting up stuff. And I didn't want to say it to him, but I was like, I worded up a guy that knew him well. I said, just maybe push him away from what he's doing because I didn't post a single thing on harvesting and stuff. And I don't want to be, you know, goody two shoes about it, but I just didn't want it because I just don't want to give, there's guys out there that do it for a living. And if you indirectly affect their living, that's really, really bad to do something like that, which is something you could all avoid. So
that's
But especially in the hunting game. Yeah.
It's, like, you don't want to do it publicly to them. I've messaged a few guys privately, like, saying, hey, you know, like, I don't want to be a dick. I'm not trying to be a dick. But, you know, this is how people might see it. You know, I've had people do it to me in my younger days. And it happens. Just, take it down. Yeah. Don't be a dick. Yeah. And, think about how these, like, I'm in two minds about it. Like, people don't care. Like, I see it as people who are seeing those photos don't care that it's how it's presented. It could be, we can see it presented really nicely, no blood, you know, looks like the animal's sleeping. Or you could post a headshot of an animal with half its brains blown out.
Yeah.
The person that is against hunting is seeing a dead animal either way, and they're getting offended whether whether it's a nice clean photo or a brains blown out photo. Like, they don't care what it looks like. It's a dead animal to them, and they find it offensive no matter what. So it is kind of like in two minds when it comes to that type of thing.
And that's the thing. It is that two minds thing where some people are always just going to get offended no matter what. But, you know, if we can put our foot right the first time, that's the best thing we should do, really. Yeah. I'm all for people posting up bucks they're shooting and all that kind of stuff. That's sick. But it's when you're drawing the line on, like, yeah, it's probably, you know, that's where we've got to be, like, get around each other and, you know, be like, yeah, call people out if they're doing something that's really not on at all.
That's it, man. That's it. I had a question. I've completely blanked on what it was. We went down a different tangent, and it's completely gone. I hate it when that happens.
Yeah, that's not good.
And then you've especially already... Oh, that's what it was. With your social media site, how many non-hunters are you getting come to you and you're explaining how ethical hunting is and how many people are coming to you, like, how dare you do this, but then you're kind of changing their mind once they chat to you?
In the whole time I've done it, and that's probably 2 and a bit years of, like, proper selling at markets and all that kind of stuff, I've only had one lady, like, have a go at me, and she was drunk because it was, like, this wine festival thing, and I kind of couldn't hold my tongue and gave it back to her a little bit because it was, like, she, you know. But 9 times out of 10, I reckon about, I would say over 50% of my customers are people that will never pick up a rifle and will never shoot her own deer, but they love the animal and what it's about, and they like the story of, and a lot of the time I'll explain that story to them either maybe after they're purchased the actual hide too. So, like, there's still a really, you know, and a lot of people get nostalgic about it because they say their grandfather had skins or their dad used to tan or that, and that's where they kind of, it does bring a lot of nostalgia with some people too, a bit like me. So yeah. It's been really pretty good response from people.
That's cool. That's hopefully turning, like, you know, you see, like, a lot of these hippy dippy city type people that like the home decor type side of things, you know, antlers, skulls, skins, you know, there's that page on Facebook, is it Bone Buddies Australia or whatever it is? Yeah. And it's, you know, people selling skulls and, hey, I found this skull, what is it? All of that type of stuff. But people liking to display skulls and that, which is pretty cool to see. And a lot of them will never hunt in their life, you know, and they only want ethically harvested stuff or, you know, naturally dyed type stuff, which is cool to see that, you know, people like yourself, I've directed a few other people to that page to sell fox skins and tails and all of that, and people just buy it up left, right and center. They love that type of stuff. But hopefully that when they've got that sitting around their home, like, they're, you know, someone else comes in and they see that and you're like, oh, you know, I got it from this person that's hunted this, you know, how good's that? And they're like, oh yeah, that is pretty good. And, you know, it'd be almost cool if you had, like, a little card that explained hunting that went with every skin, you know.
And that's the thing, I put that this time around for the expo, I put a full leaflet saying, you know, the product you're buying is a 100% waste product. And, you know, so I added that with every hide people bought, was an information slip just saying, you know, because that's the thing, if you get someone in there that's like, they get a bit funny about it or whatever, because you always gonna have friends that might get a bit funny about it, but at least you can be like, no, that rug there,
that's cool,
is literally, it's cool and it's got the story behind it.
Have you posted a photo of that pamphlet up on your socials?
No, I haven't really, like, I've just, like said, it's a lot of stuff. I'm like, I'm needed probably put a bit more time and stuff into that kind of thing. Like,
send us a photo of that pamphlet. I'm pretty cool, pretty keen to see that and post that up.
Just a little spiel, just saying, you know, like, you know, this is 100% product, waste product that's going on your floor, and nothing too complicated.
There you go. You're way ahead of it. That's awesome.
Yeah,
I didn't even see that.
Yeah.
Oh, that's great. Well, for people that have enjoyed listening to this episode and they want to check out your stuff, where's your social media? You've got Instagram, TikTok, Facebook.
Yeah, Yeah, Instagram, the Tannery Bar, is where most of my good stuff goes up on there. And then it would be everything else kind of goes on to TikTok on Lockie Bar TikTok. So that's where I post a bit of other content as well. So across those kind of two platforms. But a lot of the time, yeah, Instagram is where I post a lot of the updates on markets and whether I'm doing an expo or something like that. So, yeah.
That's awesome. And you got a website as well, do you?
Yeah, the website literally should be done this week sometime.
Beautiful.
I've literally just got it finished up the final details because I've been meaning to pull my finger out and actually get it done.
Well, this episode's up Tuesday, so hopefully after Tuesday it's up.
Yeah, and so.
What can people find on your website apart from skins and stuff?
Yeah, so I've got my merchandise, like a few, my T-shirt designs. I've got a few other bits and pieces to come up. The gamble hooks sort of had handmade in my local area by a guy who built my hunting rig, like-minded hunters themselves. So, you know, everything is, you know, I want to make good quality products, and that's what I'm kind of really harming, like trying to, I guess, get across to people is everything I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to half-ass it. I want to do it properly. And skulls as well, a bit of antlers, stuff like that. So that's kind of what I'm selling at the moment on my website.
That's awesome. And you've just got the shirts and the merch side of things, or?
Yeah, shirts, merch side of things. And the hides are good. I've got eight hides left over since Mansfield, which is like,
usually what'd you take? You took 30 or 40 to?
37 hides. So I just got absolutely slammed. So
how good's that?
And then I've got other hides. So yeah, and I'm trying to sell a few other hides in Hillsville. There's a shop my mates opened that have a few hides in there for sale as well. So so T Ferdinand, his shop down there. So that's not many there, but just a few. So yeah.
So yeah, if people want skins or antlers or skulls, hit you up. You know, if anyone owns like little boutique freaking stores and shit like that, or you know, what those home decor stores, or you know, hit you up for some skins and some antlers to chuck on display.
It is a unique item, and that's what's really cool about it, because it's not only it doesn't have to go on the floor, it could go on the couch, or it can go on a chair, or it can get draped over something. I had one guy hanging up on his wall, like, you know, so yeah, it's kind of cool.
And the best thing about it, like you said, it's a waste product. Like all of these skins would have just been going in the bin. And rotting.
Yeah, yeah,
which
literally
is
go
freaking awesome.
Yeah, so at least that's what I love about it too, because it's like, yeah, it's that full zero product, the zero waste kind of product. So yeah, especially, and that's all big now, like the recycle, reuse, and yeah. And I'm not trying to be some greeny hippie kind of person. I think it's just we should look after the environment, and we should take care of the place, and, you know, we should all, I don't know, just, it's that whole thing, like hunting's a great thing. It's what we should do, and it's a great thing to be involved in.
That's it. And then if you got a bunch of skins, if you're a shooter or anything like that and you're in Vic, hit Lockie up and he'll take them off your hands. Sounds like he needs as many as he can get. Keep you nice and busy.
The rut's going to be big. I'm not looking forward to it. I'm going to get absolutely slammed. I know.
That's so good. I can't wait to see all the videos. But thank you for coming on, man.
No worries,
you know,
man.
It's been a long time coming. We've been chatting over TikTok for shit. Yeah, probably start of 2020, maybe 2019, whenever you started up your account. And you've just blown up from it, which has been awesome to see. And then finally getting to meet you at the expo was good, even though, you know, it was probably 10, 15 minutes worth of chatting in total over the whole day. But it was good.
And that's the thing, like, I have to try and get a hunt organized maybe when I go to South Australia, and we're going to hit up the Flinders Ranges or something. That'd be cool.
I need to find some property up there. Oh, no, you said you've got,
you've got it already.
Let's do it.
When I've got the time, maybe next year.
We'll get a bunch of goat skins for you to take home.
Absolutely. Let's do it. I'll be locking in, all right?
Done. Easy. Thank you very much, man.
Zach, have a good one. Appreciate it, man. Have a great night.
Catch you. You too. Thank you for joining the Hunting Connection podcast. We hope you've enjoyed our discussions and gained valuable insights into the world of hunting, fishing, and the outdoors. To stay connected with us and never miss out on an update, please be sure to follow us on social media, all at Hunting Connection Podcast. We appreciate your support and would love for you to share the podcast with your friends and family. Don't forget to tag us in your hunting photos on social media and let us know about your experiences. Your feedback is invaluable to us, so please take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast. Together, we continue growing and delivering more captivating episodes for all hunting enthusiasts. Stay connected, stay informed, and keep pursuing your passion for the hunt. Until next time, happy hunting.